Going on, man. This is Ice Nigma.
Yeah, and this is Stig Nigma, and this is Enigmas Unchained. So now we're talking about music and message. So question number one, what made his style and delivery different?
I can start first on this one. I think it was very poetic. I'll get to that later. I'll say that for later in the show. Okay. But it was just very poetic in his delivery. And he was very methodical in his delivery, too. And it was easy as an audience to recite along with him. You know, it was very, very well paced. That he understood his beat selection, too, is a very underrated part of him as an artist.
That's a good point.
I'll say the most underrated part for later, but I think his beat selection and ability to sequence albums and songwriting ability was very underrated. So I think all those things.
Agreed. Anybody else?
Mitchell, get in there, man.
Oh, yeah. I got you. Like, there wasn't too much repetition with his songs. Like, whatever the song was about, you got the message. I was saying, whether it was, you know, about the woman that was going through issues and then leaving a baby in the dumpster.
Yeah.
Whether it was about, you know, putting his mama on the highest pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was about dissing Biggie.
That's why I love Mitchell.
Like, you couldn't escape whatever message was going on in his song. You know what I'm saying? And like he didn't, and like pretty much like we've said all night, like he didn't miss his words at all. Like what you was gonna receive was what you was gonna get. And he made sure of that with each song, with each album.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I didn't even think about like what CJ was saying, like with his beat selection, but
yeah, I didn't think about it either.
Like you got cats to this day. Like, yeah, you know, saying they'll hop on the beat just because that's the wave. But you know, by the time they hop on the board, then it fell off.
Hey, yo, Sean and CJ, for y'all podcasters, you guys would do it better. Y'all need to go through people who have classically chosen bad beats for some. like this could be anybody. You know what I'm saying? Like
just, oh, Nas?
Yeah.
Yes.
Curtis Ballard Hall of Famer right there.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Right.
I'm just saying. Like, I think that would be dope. Like, just throwing out there for your audience ideas. Cause like, going throughout
every 10-year average.
Yeah. Like go through the 90s and 2000s. You know, 2010s, and just pick a selection of songs where you like, yeah, this sucker should have never had this beat. Like, this beat was a mistake. In this person's hands. You know, that's like Silk the Shocker's entire career too.
Silk the Shocker picked great beats. He just can't rap over them. Wait a minute, now. Rap over.
At that point, he had beats by the pound. Like, well, anybody on the at that point had beats by the pound. You can't go wrong with them.
Yeah, Kate.
It's just
like, oh yeah, and let's not even get into that, because KLC to me is arguably the most underrated producer that we've had in the last 20+ years, man. Man. And there was a No Limit before Beats by the Pound, and there was No Limit afterwards. And I'll leave it at that. One thing I will speak to as far as Pac, I would say in my lifetime, there are two rappers that they have a flow and they have a delivery and they have a purpose as far as how they spit. Most, especially when you coming into the game, most spitters, whether you, you know, you on the hip hop side or you on the rap side, whatever, you know, side you fall on, you won't, it's like they want to come at you, they want to blow you away so you know exactly who they are, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would say in my lifetime, Tupac Shakur and a guy down here in the Cadillacs with us, J. Cole,
yeah,
are two rappers where I feel like if I sat down on the porch with them and we were just having a drink and just having a conversation, they could speak to me conversationally almost exactly as they rap to me. They're not trying to blow me away. Mm-hmm. They trying to, you know what I mean? They trying to tell me something. They trying to drop, you know what I mean, some things for me to think about.
Yeah.
I feel like I can take their lyrics and we can sit down and we can literally have a discussion. You know what I'm saying? At, like basically, literally as they spit. Pop right. just had a way of delivering. And I think it was even more so with Tupacalypse, strictly for my, you know what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
and in my, and Me Against the World, where I think was definitely on display at a extremely high level there.
Mm.
I would say, you know, all basically post-jail, All Eyes on Me, it, you know, slightly different, but it was still that same sincerity. And he's like, look, you already know who I am, so I'm not going to be on some try hard type stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm giving it to you. It's what it is.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it. The sincerity, again, that came across as a person also came across in his lyrics. And I think that's what made, that was a separator for him, for me.
And that's fair too. Cause I would add to that by saying, you know, like you were saying about like him not trying to use, he's not trying to find the most quippiest metaphor to make a point. You know what I'm saying? He gonna say what he gotta say. And it's powerful, you know, versus like, I don't have to find, you know, these two words that may sound the same that do this particular thing for this particular line. So people are like, oh, that line. And then they forget the entire song. You know, like this is literally the Cookout album. You know what I'm saying? Like this is the one that like you literally can get multiple generations to sit down and listen to it. And you're like, yo, do you get what he's saying? You know, because I remember when I was younger, Tupacalypse Now was being played at my uncle's in their house when we was at the Cookout. You know, I said there wasn't nobody else's album was allowed to Cookout. It was Pop. You know, because Pop was conversational, like you say, he's conversational. Like you can like hear that song, you're like, oh shoot, yeah, let's talk about that. Like, young man, come over here real quick. I need you to listen to this real quick. And you're like, what is it about? And then they start breaking stuff down for you. I'm like,
keep your head up.
Yeah, yeah.
Is a conversation I've had with OGs when I was coming up multiple times. He just happened to put it in a dope song.
Facts.
But the meaning behind it, the purpose behind it was just as genuine. And again, yeah, I did not know him, but he can come across in a way that related to me like people I knew, that like people that I wanted to learn from and wanted to emulate.
Facts.
Again, that's the thing, that whatever that it is, that's what he had.
Yeah.
That almost no one else, with the possible exception of J. Cole, has, in my
opinion. Yeah, and it's crazy. It's like, you know, we get the new argument between, you know, they kind of talk about Kendrick and J. Cole. And what I just described, I think Kendrick Lamar does more. And this is not, I think dude's a phenomenal lyricist, but I think he's more metaphorical. You know, he's trying to find the nicest hook, nicest way to say this particular thing, this particular way. And J. Cole, like, nah, I'm shooting to you straight. You know, and that once again, that's not a shade to either style. That's just like how they kind of both operate on the same spectrum, so to speak. But one is like trying to make you look deeper. The other one is like, nah, I can put my arm around your shoulder and tell you what's going on. You know what I'm saying? Which I agree with you that J. Cole is one of them dudes that like, he just got the game and he's like, I'll share with you what the game is. You know, Kendrick Lamar is a dude that's like, you need to fill out this job application. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. No, I'm not saying that's like, you know, he's telling you, no. I need you to come up first. Come on up here real quick. You know what I'm saying? But J. Cole's that dude. He's on a block. He's an honor. Just come over here and sit with me. They're two completely different approaches. We need both. But they're just two completely different approaches. And I think that Pac, to me, was more like J. Cole's kind of emulating Pac style. And to me, Biggie is doing like, and this is no shit. I'm just saying, like, as far as like his lyrical prowess, you know what I'm saying? How he was able to metaphorically just rip, I mean, just wrap these bands around. You're like, God dang. You know, this is like, you're like, okay, all right, brother. You know what I'm saying? Like that, you kind of felt like you had to get to his level. So if you get what I'm saying? You got to get to his level to really, really get everything that he's talking about, to do everything that he's talking about. Or you had to be within that system to know what's going on. Pop, he said something to cats on the East Coast, and he ain't over there. And the cats on the East Coast understood exactly what he was saying without having to think two times. First time try on the song, they're like, oh, we get what he's talking about. And I said, Biggie, you have to keep replaying. And now, let's say, that's not no shade. That's just like, because of the way that he rhymes, you have to catch the metaphors. To keep catching the metaphors. Like, okay, oh man, I didn't notice what he meant when he said that, you know.
But I was literally listening to, I was on the bags training the other day, and I switched to the Bobby Duvall playlist, and it had Long Kiss Goodnight off of Life After Death. Over 20 years later, and having heard that song probably 24 times, if not more, I got something new from it that I had never caught before.
Yep.
That's Notorious B.I.G.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Tupac, from the very first time I hear any song he's ever done, I got exactly what I needed immediately. Yep. And that's the difference.
Yep. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's once again, that doesn't make the other one greater than the other one. That just, to me, that's two people you need. You need a person there that needs to be on the ground with you. You also need a person that's saying, come on up here. You need two. You need both of them together. So I thought it was very interesting that we normally have a counter in every generation where one can sit with you and the other one is telling you, no, I want you to process this a little bit more. So you just want to throw that out there. So second question. What is your favorite song and album by Pac? I think we kind of touched on this a little bit throughout the thing, but I want to just get definitive. So anybody can shoot and tell me what you want, which one it is.
Get on in there, CJ. Let them know, man.
Okay, hold on, man. Wait a minute. It's like asking me to pick my favorite child. Like, if I was like a parent, you know, all parents have their own favorite child, no matter what they say. I'm going to say, I like the 7 Day Theory. I think it's a highly underrated pop album.
You said 7 Day Theory?
Yeah, Don Kanumanati, the one with Live and Die in L.A., Crazy, which is one of my favorite pop songs ever. Bomb First, which is just disrespectful. I'm gonna be real basic. I'm gonna say All Eyes. I'm gonna say All Eyes on Me.
Okay.
I think, but you know, no, scratch that. I'm gonna say my favorite Pac album, which is different than the best. So my favorite, taking just me being biased, is Don Kanumanati, the 7 Day Theory.
Okay.
Because it has a lot of joint, because I feel like Crazy is one of my favorite pop songs. Me and My Girlfriend is on there. To Live and Die in L.A., which made me want to consider going to college in L.A., honestly, just because of the way he painted
this. This is actually true, people. Yeah, like this is he had a fond obsession with the West Coast. He probably still has it right now in his blood now.
Good. Oh, yeah. I want to live on the West Coast. If it wasn't so expensive, then it would be an earthquake that will separate California from the U.S. at some point. I would probably do it. But
So, Sean, who you got?
You know what? To CJ's point, you know, I believe his best album, all things considered, is All Eyes on Me.
Okay.
But my favorite album, and this has never changed, Me Against the World. Me Against the World is my favorite Pac album. I think it was the most sincere to himself in that moment that we ever got from him.
Yeah.
I think everything that he was going through, you can listen to that album across the board. You can listen to Me Against the World, the track. You can listen to So Many Tears. You know what I mean? He was like, and again, the sincerity. I'm not trying to be out here acting like, you know what I mean, nothing gets to me, that you know, life doesn't, you know, knock me down sometimes. Like, I go through it too. This fame don't make me immune from going through it. I'm in the middle of this. I'm trying to figure this out. We gotta remember how young this dude was, man.
Facts.
I mean, he was barely into his 20s going through all this.
Look, I mean, that's the crazy part.
Trying to figure it out.
Yeah. It's crazy.
You know what I'm saying? Lord knows, man. You know, ain't nothing like the old school. death around the corner, you know, literally death around the corner. Right. That, I mean, that album to me, he took you, I think Dear Mama was probably on that. Matter of fact, it was on Me Against the World, I would think. Think about this. If I'm not mistaken, and CJ, I know you're going to fact check me. You do what you do. If I'm off on this, is this the first time that you had a rapper that had the number one album and he was locked up at the same time? So while this album was out, he was locked up. Going through it, man.
That's a good question.
I think that's the first and maybe only not only time, but the first time where you had a number one album out and you was locked.
Dude couldn't even afford the bail to get himself out because all the money.
First of all, he wasn't getting money like we thought at the time, and the money he was getting, he was throwing the lawyers and throwing at this and keeping this quiet and doing all of that.
You know what I mean?
So he was going through it, and you got that sincerity on all phases, on all levels on that album. And that remains, and it'll probably never change, my favorite Tupac album, Me Against the World. And I think you had, did you say album and song or just
album and song? Yep, album and song.
Song? Ooh. Look, I got kids, so you can't ask me that question, man.
You can forego it if you can't, but I'm saying, like,
you know what?
If you can't, I understand. You know what I'm saying?
If you're gonna put me to it, I would probably say Crazy off the off the Machiavelli joint. Time goes by, puffing no lie. Open that against me. You know what I'm saying? Man. That track, I don't care what vibe I'm on, what mood I'm in, I can get something different from that track, even though I understand the purpose of it. Each and every time I hear it, it's timeless. It aged well. Track is over 20-something years old.
Yeah.
If somebody told me that was produced a couple months back and it just dropped today, I would believe it. Mm. Something about that track. Like, man, if I had to pick one, I would probably go Crazy as far as a song. And if I was to pick an album, Me Against the World, no question about it.
Bet. So Mitchell, you back on?
Yeah, man, I'm on.
All right, so favorite Pac album and favorite Pac song. They don't have to be. They don't have to be from the same album. Like the song doesn't have to be from the same album.
Oh yeah, no. Oh, you done about to pinball all over this one. I mean, and granted, I love Me Against the World. I love that album. But I'm gonna say I'm about to go around the world too. My favorite feature is Smile.
Okay.
I've always loved this. I loved it when I first heard it. I was listening to it the other day. Funny thing about it, and I hope that I get the story behind this right. They literally had to track Pac down and pin him down to that to actually get his vocals for the song.
That's crazy. That's true. I was gonna say, if that's true, that's crazy, because like they killed that song. That song is great. Yeah. Wow.
Because when they were supposed to actually do the song, he ended up going this place, and then they finally tracked him down. He's like, "All right, cool, I'm about to do it." Then end up going somewhere else.
On a sneak tip, though, Pac was Monkey D. Luffy, but that's a whole nother situation. you know what I'm saying? Like that's an anime reference, but I'm just it's like they got too many similarities. I think Oda was a Pac man. Continue.
All right. So now I'm about to bring it back home.
All right.
My favorite Pac song. I'm gonna say Do For Love.
Okay.
That was my favorite song from him.
That's a really good one. That's really.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And so, that being said, so my actual favorite album from him was Are You Still Down?
Because I'm saying you had Do For Love, you had the title track with John B. That was more, to me, that was more of a, he was pretty much like just like relaxed on that album.
Yeah, that kind of felt like his Sunday break. You know what I'm saying? Like that, mm-hmm. that album felt like he actually got a chance to breathe, because everything after that he was breathing fire. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, that does make sense. And that kind of fits your disposition too, being an ice cold one. So
now before I leave it alone. I think now the most fun song, and I hate to say it like this, but to me the most fun song that he did was "When We Ride on Our Enemies."
This is what it sounds like when we ride on our enemies.
You're a sociopath, Mitchell.
Look, man, I'm sorry. But I mean, you know, we had fun with that track when they
dropped, man. CJ, you can front all you want in a second. You was in the number. You was in the number.
Yeah, but it's the way he says it that makes him such a I'm just not putting the beat. He loves the lyrics, which I thought we about to touch on in a minute.
Oh man, but yeah, like that was a fun track. Yes, it was a diss track. Yes, it was not very nice, but hey, I enjoyed it. So forgive me for that. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, that's right, man.
And before we keep it moving, man, I said Crazy was definitely my favorite, but the one that I appreciated the most as far as coming out of left field and something I didn't expect. And y'all helped me out. It was a joint on All Eyes on Me where he had Daz on there. He had Method Man, Red Man, Corrupt. I got my mind made up. Something like that. I got my mind made up. Come on. And it was basically just like a cipher. It was a cipher before BET was putting out ciphers at the awards, where they just all came on there. And it was just all spitting. And it was one of the rare times where I saw Pac really on the lyrical side of things. Like, you know, he had Meth on there. And this was when Meth was at his most meth. And Red was at his most red. And Corrupt, to me, I always say he was, to me, he was underrated as an MC.
Oh, bro.
And it was just refreshing to see that side. Is that what it's called? I got my mind made up, a mind made up, whatever. Off of All Eyes on Me, man. And it was just good, and it was refreshing to see him on the lyrical side to say, look, man, I do what I do and I don't apologize for it. But don't think that I can't throw these bars out too. That I may make you, don't think I don't make you reach for a dictionary every now and then. I could do that too. You know what I'm saying? So I'm glad that he was able to, throw out those types of tracks every now and then and let you know, oh, I'm multifaceted out here. I can do a little bit of everything. I choose to be in this lane, but it ain't the only lane. You know, so yeah, I just had to throw that out there.
Now that's good though. I mean, like, I'm the square though, because I got to say All Eyes on Me. That's my favorite. I mean, because like that was my first 2-disc CD. You know, so I was like, how many songs he got in this thing? You know, I was like, yo, this is enough music for days. I was like.
Yeah,
so I just popped the sucker in, and I'm not finished. I'm like, oh, this is great. It's like, you know, no, but the feeling, like it's like when you let's be real. Back in the day, most of these albums like 45 minutes. We thought it was long, but most of these albums like 45 minutes, maybe 50 minutes. And he giving me like about 200 minutes of content. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is great. You know what I'm saying? So like that was my joint. You know what I'm saying? Like I. It's crazy. I remember I was coming into to do an event, and I was coming in to do an event, and I was playing California Love, and I was like, just I love California. That's actually one of my I'm just going, and I can't stand California. I can't stand it. There's nothing about it that I want. And CJ, and that's no shade towards you. I understand. You know what I'm saying? But just nothing I want is in California. But I love the song though. So but I remember playing that joint, and there was an executive white dude he's a territorial manager for Best Buy, and he said he walked by the car with his briefcase. He got his like nice crisp suit on, and he was like he was not on the rail. This wig is good. He heard California, and he was like down about it. He was actually outside. He was outside the car killing it. And
so what was your question? When did Poppy come mainstream? When stuff like that happened? Exactly. There you go.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
Because I asked him, he said, well, I'm from California. You know what I'm saying? So he said, I'm from Cali. So we would be right in the city. You know, like he was actually in there, you know, when he was younger. You know, so I was like, that's pretty gay. But I really enjoyed that album. The I Ain't Mad At You is my favorite song, man. Like that's a I Ain't Mad At You. Because I had to use that for me and my pop. You know what I'm saying? When he was still alive. And like, I had to use that to calm myself from not killing that man. You know what I'm saying? Like so mm-hmm. when I listened to that song, I was like, I ain't mad. I had to like literally say to myself, like, I ain't mad at you. I have to pull this anger that I got, and I need to pull it down, you know what I'm saying? Not be that same thing that made you. I need to be something else. You know what I'm saying? So like that was my joint when we were growing up. So yeah, like, and still to this day, you pop that joint on, you might catch a tear in the brother eye. Cause I got, yeah, cause like that it just got, it has a lot of significant meaning. Like my uncle's favorite Pac song was I Ain't Mad At You. And that was, like I told you, Tupac was now the one he used to play at the cookout, you know, like Young Black Male on rotation. Whenever we got together, you know what I'm saying? It was on rotation, you know, but yeah, like that's a Pac that big, man. You know what I'm saying? That big, that like you got four different black boys from four different walks of life that all like figured out something that he could tell you to help you keep moving. So, all right. So now question number three. Go ahead, man. Yeah.
No, I mean, this is just a random tidbit, you know.
Okay.
Because I know you said that All Eyes on Me was your first double disc.
Yeah, yeah.
Mine was Wu-Tang Forever.
Oh, shoot, man. No, you know what? Because I remember, no, for real, because I remember when we became roommates, I had never had a Wu-Tang. I listened to the tracks, but I had never had the actual albums. You know, I love Red. I love Method Man.
Of course.
Love Method Man, yo. Like, that's my dude. You know, so if I was going to, like, have a top three, he's in my top three. You know, that's a personal list. I ain't trying to get into lyrical. I don't care about that. I'm talking about my list, you know, Method Man's the top three. So I was a fan, so I would buy Takal. You know, something I would buy, but I didn't buy the album Wu-Tang, A, because I didn't like RZA. And that's like no shit. It's no shade. Not saying that RZA, I'm talking about as far as his, I didn't like hearing him rap. But producer wise, dude's a monster. You know, but yeah, I remember you had that album and you was like, you would whip it. You know what I'm saying? Like you whip it out. I was like, that's it, this Wu-Tang. You're like, yeah, I'm like, shoot, that thing sound good. You know, so yeah, that's a yeah. So all right, that's the question. So okay. So question number three. What message made by Pac do you think was the most controversial in his music?
I think, see, and then that's the crazy thing, because after a while, you know, the media, like, after a while, you know how the media do. Like, they picked apart all the negative songs. Like, you know what I'm saying? The songs that had negative connotations, mm-hmm. quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the ones that had the messages with them.
Yeah.
So, you know, at some point, Brenda Got a Baby didn't get played as much as Hit 'Em Up.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Because, like,
yeah,
on that, like, you know what I'm saying? He dissing Big Junior Mafia. He's saying, hey, dude, like, I hit up your wife, you know. So they doubled down on that, on that stuff. They doubled down on him spitting into the reporter spaces and stuff. So, like, Let me see. You say like what song, right?
Yeah, like it could be a song. I'll actually add song or line, like that you think is the most like one of the most controversial things that he actually said.
I'm gonna say, well, no, Ambitions of a Rider is always gonna be a, like, you turn that on in the club, that's rap. America's Most Wanted.
Okay.
Because at that point, I think him, Pac, and Snoop had gotten into some trouble.
Mm.
So you got, you know what I'm saying? So they put the song out, and then they got the video out. And I think, and if, correct me if I'm wrong, but like with the video, I think they went to trial, they got off, and they still riding around. I think, you know, I think they robbed, I don't know if they robbed a bank or it was. Basically, it was like, all right, well, yeah, we know what I'm saying. Pretty much, we got off scot free, and that you could do it to us, whether you like it or not. So it's pretty much like a big spit in the face to everybody that was just against rap music, period, at that point.
Hmm. Anybody else?
His message about, you know, the poor eating the rich. If we're gonna be real,
okay,
like he had a very, no matter what you know, I know everybody has different political opinions, but he, if you listen to his music has a lot of socialist messaging in it.
He does,
and I think that kind of got taken away. And no matter what you think of socialism itself, the message of the poor rising up and you can only do the poor wrong for so long.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's something that came through that got spun in a negative light. So that'll probably be his most controversial thing, because that's the stuff they didn't want you to hear.
Yeah.
To Mitchell's point, they wrote out the stuff as gangster rap and other stuff, but he was really talking some real stuff.
Yeah.
When you listen to his music and you watch his interviews. So maybe that messaging to me.
Sean.
I would say it's a combo. I'm gonna start it with the music. I would say the album, you know, strictly for my, you know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. That album right there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the most. And this was also the Sea to Loris Tucker. This was the NWA, Ice Cube Predator era, that time frame with Ice-T, where it was just like, okay, we need to stop this before this poisons. And I think what was the Mitchell, CJ, you know, T-Nigma, help me out on this one. I think it was Holler If You Hear Me. I think that was the track. And the video was where this dude was literally like, it was just, yeah, at one point he was behind bars. He had the little beanie on. He had the had the gun out, basically just saying like, look, I'm coming. I think it was Holler If You Hear Me.
I think it is Holler If You Hear Me. Live Squad was on that, right?
Probably so.
Okay. I'm trying to remember.
And the thing about it was, so if you're not necessarily paying attention to what he was actually saying, to CJ's point, and you just going off that imagery, you're going to reach a certain conclusion. And then a short time later, I know he was doing an interview, and not to, you know, take this to that lane too far, but he was talking about how, you know, Trump, he was like, how can you be in a position where you got the rich getting richer? Mm-hmm. And you got, you know what I mean, people out here starving, people out here, they can't eat, they can't do anything. And he was like, imagine if, you know, you go to that door, you know, right behind that door, you hear all this party and they just throwing food away. They just throwing stuff away. They just not caring about nothing. And you knocking, right? Mm-hmm. And they won't let you in. Okay, you start by knocking and eventually you're going to start banging. And then eventually that bang going to turn and I'm going to just kick this door down and come on in here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not asking questions at this point because I've been trying to knock on the door to ask questions. You ain't listening. I banged on the door to ask questions. You ain't listening. Now that I'm kicking in the door, we ain't got nothing to talk about.
Yep. Right? Just give me my food.
It was that 92, 93 post-Juice where the revolutionary is, you know, he went from, okay, I'm just going to make a speech to, all right, where that action at? We can go to the mattresses. Enough. Right? I think that time frame for him was probably his most controversial musically and the way the perception was. And I think the perception, he never truly escaped it. And
that
perception had a lot to do with, you know, everything that happened to him in the subsequent years, including getting locked up. So I would just say that time frame, the music of Strictly For My You Know What, and then just the way he was coming off at post Juice.
You know, and that's all valid too, because like once again, this is around the same time where labels and stuff like that for music was changing. You know, we had Uncle Luke. Now, just like a, you know, a history lesson in that particular point in time. You know, there were not really explicit labels for anything. You know, even NWA and them like was contributing to it, but I think Luke pushed it over. Uncle Luke pushed it over to the edge, and they were like, no. We need to actually label certain things explicit and certain things that are actually within peer view. And when that happened, they were able to label anybody. So unfortunately, at least I remember this, you know, when I was going to like the FYE or something like that, when I was younger, to try and find to get a Pac album, they were, where were they, Metro? They were in the back, like literally they were in the back covered by clothes or something like that. You know, it was crazy. You know what I'm saying? But you had like, you know, let's say Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley album, you know, like sitting on, I don't want that. You know, so this is FYE. I thought this was 1990. You know what I'm saying? I thought we was in America. You know, like, you know, I thought we was in America. You know what I'm saying?
But we're going to push this Elvis album.
Yeah, you know, like push the Elvis album, put Pac's album on the back. And then, like you said, you know, anything that was provided was his anger. That's it. They didn't let him, whenever he had an intellectual conversation, especially because the media was so limited. You know, so I always go back to the Tupac Lives Now interview. That interview was buried for close to 20 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was like spitting game, but I mean, most people don't even know because they were able to bury that, but they would give you him like literally like spitting at a camera and like fighting the dude. So they'll give you that, but they won't give you the intellectual that he is. You know, they only call and they'll round him up and then they start videotaping him. You know what I'm saying? And that's what white America got a lot, you know, of, you know, especially like with the media and stuff like that. While we like, no, that's not who he is. And they're like, oh, y'all just don't understand. This dude's a criminal. And we're like, no, there's more to this dude than meets the eye. You need to pay attention. So each one of you guys brought up a very, very good point. And then this is one that I think is like probably the closest because we're all, Sean, you're originally from Ohio, correct? I remember we talking about that, right? You're originally from Ohio, right?
Yeah, man. Born in Cincinnati.
Yeah. So he's Cincinnati baby boy. You know, like now see me, CJ and Ice, we all are Cacolet kids. You know what I'm saying? So we all like it's a deep South. You know, Southeast kids. He's like primarily North, Northeast, I guess you could. I don't know because they wouldn't classify y'all as center, right? I don't think that they wouldn't classify Ohio as center. They would classify it more to Northwest. Like, right. I'm just making sure I got Northeast, my bad, not Northwest.
Yeah, Northeast.
Yeah.
Northeast.
Right. Okay. I'll just make, yeah. So we still in that same, we're still on the East side. So, and this is just real because we talked about it a little bit earlier, you know, so. Was his fame restricted? We already know the answer to this, but I'm just asking it. Was his fame restricted to the West, or was he also accepted in the East? And if not, can you remember anything that helps back up that claim? So, like I was talking about earlier about how the cookouts was a place where literally every grown man that I knew was listening to pop in the East, Southeast. You know what I'm saying? I remember in Fairfield. The night Pac died, I was on Cemetery Street at my homeboy house. And I remember when we found out that Pac died, you heard wailing in the streets from grown black men crying in the streets, yo. You know what I'm saying? I had never heard that in my life. Never. I was like, what's going on? And they're like, Pac died. I'm like, what? And it hit everybody on that block. Cats was outside crying, yo. It was crazy. I was like, what is going on right now? You know, so anybody else has like a situation where they can remember where Pop was like, was just established in the East where you were?
Well, I mean, I don't know. To be honest, I don't think of the South as the East, to be completely fair, because I feel like the South is just his own totally different thing when it comes to hip hop. So I would say he's always been accepted because I also think the South and the West have a very kindred relationship when it comes to music.
That's fair. That's fair.
That a lot of other people don't have. Kind of the West and a lot of people, because the West knew what it was like to be the little brother per se. Because they knew what it was like to try to earn respect from New York and that East Coast way. So they didn't treat other places like when the Midwest scene was popping up or with down South scene popping up. They didn't treat us crazy. And plus, musically, a lot of their music was very sample heavy, funk based, and that's a lot of Southern music when you think about it, and the stuff that we grew up playing in our homes. I mean, I think Pac was beloved everywhere. I can't speak for New York because I'm not, you know, I didn't grow up there, so I don't want to speak for that. And it's probably a different dynamic because there's issues with Biggie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Pac was probably, you know, beloved everywhere, you know, or at least accepted. Let me put it like that. Maybe he wasn't beloved everywhere because I don't want to speak for places I didn't grow up in.
Yeah,
I think everybody at least knew his musical talent, and everybody probably had songs that they liked by him. He was, you don't go diamond in like 1990 without being beloved everywhere, right?
That's right. Like,
there's only so many places, you know, only so many albums that go diamond. And for him to go diamond, to me, this speaks to how popular he was, especially in rap, because rap albums don't go diamond like that.
No. No,
you gotta be a special kind of monster for that.
Yeah, like that's Michael Jackson stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. I'm just saying, as far as like that diamond stuff, like that's. But rappers, I was like, this don't make sense. You know, like literally, it did not make sense. I was like, good. Well, it makes as far as like, you know, we know, but it's just, I would never expect that he would have been accepted at that large of a reach. You know, like where I got friends from in Japan that can recite Pac to me. You know what I'm saying? Like that's crazy.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? Real quick, man. Quick digression. Yeah. How many rap albums, hip hop, whatever you want to call it, can you recall off the top of your head that have gone down? And I know at least one Outkast joint did.
Speaker Box and Love Below.
Oh, there you go. Speaker Box, Love Below. All Eyes on Me. Did Life After Death hit diamond, or did it not quite get there?
I'm looking it up right now because I can't remember off the top of the dome.
However many there aren't many. So to CJ's point, the fact that that happened speaks to the fact that this man ultimately was beloved everywhere. And as you look into that,
MC Hammer.
MC Hammer.
I want to say Country Grammar went diamond too.
Country Grammar is one of them. Yeah, Country Grammar is one. Like Caesar said, MC Hammer, the Pox, like the collab is like the greatest hits. The they ain't no rap album. What are y'all talking about? Life After Death is diamond. No, because they got Linkin Park on here. I'm like, Linkin Park ain't rap. What are y'all talking about? That's I'm saying I can vibe with Linkin Park on days, but I'm like, no, that's not it. No. But yeah, like in this list.
Is Linkin, that's a different show. We're gonna have to define what rap is. That's a different show.
Just saying.
But I would make the argument that if Linkin Park came out in 2021, they would be more rap than you think.
You know, you're right. You're right. But you're right, especially like with progressive. And what's your boy name? The new dude. You know, it just shows my age. I don't care about him.
Talking about Mike? Who you talking about, Mike?
No. He was just at the Super Bowl. What's his name?
It's on Weekend.
Yeah, Weekend. The guy.
Hey, now the Weekend, my dog.
I just don't. I just don't listen to him. But I'm saying, like, when I hear his style, I can see Linkin. I can see him and Linkin Park, like literally killing it together because it just made sense to vibe. They made sense to vibe together. I'm just saying, you know. So yeah, I'm just throwing it out there, you know. Like, but yeah, like, but you're right though. You're right though, Sean. Like there's not many. There's not many.
And you know what I'm saying? You know, here's how I'll put it, because Cincinnati's at the very bottom of Ohio, right above Kentucky. So at that time, we was to keep it 1,000 with you. If good music was good music, whether it was Bone Thugs and Harmony at the top of the state, you know what I'm saying? And what they was doing in Cleveland, whether it was, you know, Mos and Talib getting ready to break through ahead of Black Star. Whether it was 8-Ball and MJG and 3-6, we didn't. If it was good music, it was good music. We was about as neutral as it gets. Mm-hmm. So one thing I'll say is this: pre Me Against the World, if he was, you know, in where I'm from, if he was in Madisonville, A1, Avondale, whatever, Bond Hill, you know, chopping it up, having a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If it was 10 people, 7, 8, 10 people in that group, you might get two or three that's like, okay, you know, he cool, but you know, I'll rock with this over here. And you might get some that's like, no, that's my guy. I would say post Me Against the World is where, you know, at least in my area coming up universally, it was like, okay, no, that's, you know, he that dude. So Me Against the World was where it wasn't a comp. You wouldn't have a couple of people that's like, nah, I'm all right. Like, you know, no problems with him, but I'm all right. After Me Against the World, pretty much it was universal. Like, okay, this dude. And then All Eyes on Me took it to a whole nother level when he got out and dropped that. So I think despite, you know, and again, you know, CJ made a good point. We take this conversation to, like, if I bring this up to A.Dot Reed, who grew up in New York, he might have a whole nother.
Yeah.
The conversation's there, especially post Hit 'Em Up.
Yeah.
Let's just say we'll probably be having a different opinion, but just based on, you know, on the four of us sitting here.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we, you know, our experience is that this dude was pretty much, you know, beloved because of how genuine he was. Whether you agree with everything he may have been putting out at the time or not, as far as what he was saying, you knew it was genuine. So
that
gets you respect, you know, pretty much in most, if not all, circles. If you're going to be genuine about it, you know what? I can respect that because it ain't nothing fake about it.
Facts. Yeah.
Hey, one more thing. Hey, Sean, y'all gave me High Tech too, man. So I appreciate y'all for that.
Oh, man.
High Tech and quality. Yes, absolutely, sir.
Man. Absolutely. Yeah. Appreciate you throwing my man out there. You know, Jay Dilla gets his respect as well he should, rest in heaven. But I felt like High Tech
don't get no respect,
highly
man.
Underrated.
No respect, so man.
Glad you threw my man out there like that.
Like little to me.
Like No ID and Jay Dilla, they get what they absolutely deserve, but I feel like High Tech, you got to bring him up. It's always like you got to bring him up.
Yeah.
And then people will go, oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
And I just, I wish it wasn't like that, if that makes sense.
No, that's fair. I mean, it's like we used to vibe with High Tech, man. I was like, this dude is a set. I mean, like that's a whole nother conversation, but I would say like High Tech and Black Thought, because Black Thought's my favorite rapper. You know what I'm saying? So like Black, like those two, I think don't ever get brought up enough. When it comes to the rap conversation. But then you hear Black Thought talking, you like, God dang,